Welcome to the PZNP, Pearls of Pediatric Evidence-Based Practice. I'm your host, Dr. Becky Carson, pediatric nurse practitioner and clinical assistant professor at the Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C. And I want to issue you a febrile and snotty welcome to respiratory virus season 2024. As the parent of two small children, there seems to be a wintertime symphony in my house of, please cough into your elbow. Okay, now go wash your hands. Don't put that in your mouth. And my personal favorite, the slurping sound made by my nose, Frida. In this episode, we're going to talk in depth about nirsevimab, the new RSV vaccine to prevent severe disease in infants. We'll talk about its current recommendations, shortage strategies for vaccine administration, and talking with families about the vaccine. Last summer, the FDA approved the new long-acting monoclonal antibody, nirsevimab, for the prevention of severe RSV disease in infants. RSV is the most common virus associated with bronchiolitis and is the leading cause of hospitalization in infants less than 3 months of age. Although nirsevimab is not what we typically think of as a vaccine that provides active immunity against disease by mounting an immune response to an antigen, it provides passive immunization with direct protection through the injection of the antibody itself. So if we're calling vaccines an exogenous biological preparation that provides acquired immunity against an infectious agent, well, the monoclonal antibody still fits the definition. Plus, it's less confusing to parents who may not have that immunology background to understand the subtle differences between a monoclonal antibody and typical active immunizations. The CDC put nirsevimab on the recommended routine infant immunizations list, and this is the first time since I was a graduate student that a new routine vaccine was introduced in this age group. In this post-pandemic world filled with social media opinions and untrusted sources, it is so important for pediatric providers to understand the RSV vaccine and provide appropriate guidance to families to really make a difference on patient outcomes. First, let's talk about who should get nirsevimab and when. Then we'll talk about the current shortage rationale. The CDC recommends administration of the one-time dose of nirsevimab to all infants younger than 8 months, shortly before or during their first RSV season, so long as their mother hasn't gotten an RSV vaccine in the last 14 days. Okay, so let's unpack this a little bit. The recommendation is for all infants. Yes, all infants. And this is a divergence from prior practice surrounding palivizumab, that's Synagis, which is limited to certain very high-risk infants and has to be given monthly during the RSV season. Plus, it's extremely expensive. Because nirsevimab is long-acting, it provides protection for the entire RSV season in a single dose, which means that babies born during the RSV season, so October, November, December, January, February, or March, they should get that vaccine within a week of birth. Ideally, this could happen in hospitals or at their newborn visit. Spring and summer babies born in May, June, July, August, or September who weren't born during the RSV season, they can't be forgotten either. They'll receive the vaccine in the fall once October arrives, paired with a regularly scheduled health promotion visit at 2, 4, or 6 months. Yes, you can even give it with their regularly scheduled vaccines without any worry of interference. In fact, it's best practice to cluster them together. It's so wonderful to have an RSV vaccine that's recommended for all babies, regardless of risk factors. There's another group who needs nirsevimab a second time. That's infants and toddlers who are 8 to 19 months who are entering their second RSV season, who have the same pre-existing risk factors that would make them eligible for palivizumab. Remind me of those criteria again. Kids with chronic lung disease, immunocompromised children, and some children with cystic fibrosis. There's one additional high-risk group eligible for a second dose of nirsevimab that wasn't on the list for palivizumab, and that's American Indian and Alaska Native children. The reason for this addition is that these populations are more likely to develop severe disease, and their geographic isolation is a barrier to accessing timely care for severe bronchiolitis, and that can lead to higher rates of morbidity and mortality. So to review, all babies less than 8 months get one vaccine before or during their first RSV season. Some babies get a second dose during their second season. Let's talk about some tricky situations and nuances. Let's say a child with cystic fibrosis is born in February and gets their first dose of nirsevimab at birth. Can they get it again in October since it's technically the start of their second season? The answer is yes. Nirsevimab is long-acting and provides protection for at least 5 months. So as long as there's 5 months in between injections and the child meets criteria to receive a second dose, you should give it. I have a friend whose son has a tracheostomy, and last year he got multiple doses of palivizumab. But this year, at 18 months, entering his second RSV season, he was still eligible for nirsevimab. And she sang the praises of the one-time long-acting dose instead of having to drag, her words, not mine, a medically complex child and all his equipment to the pediatrician every month all winter long. What if a child with severe immunocompromise is 19 months and 29 days on the date of their scheduled immunization? Well, you should give it. As long as the child hasn't reached 20 months or their third RSV season, they're candidates. The reason for this age restriction is that RSV is so pervasive that by their third season or 20 months, whichever comes first, they've likely already encountered the virus and likely have some persisting immunity. So nirsevimab won't have as much benefit. Remember 2022 when we had an RSV outbreak in June? Because RSV prevalence varies throughout the continental United States, where some tropical climates have varied rates of RSV year-round, providers may take geography into account and choose to administer nirsevimab earlier than October, depending on the risks. Local public health dashboards can help guide you on the current infection rates and the ideal timing of administration. It's not recommended to extend vaccinations past March to babies born in April and beyond. You're better off waiting for the fall because those April babies will still be less than 8 months of age, entering technically their first season, and therefore are eligible for their first dose of nirsevimab. Essentially, everyone gets one dose, but only the high-risk infants need two doses. Interestingly enough, even if a baby gets RSV, the recommendations for nirsevimab are the same. Because infants can get reinfected with RSV in the same season, they just need to wait until they've recovered from their acute illness to get the dose. This season, we're experiencing a shortage, so it's important to view this through a lens of health equity. Nirsevimab is covered by the Vaccines for Children Program, or VFC, which means that VFC providers have federally purchased vaccines that are free to qualified children. If it's September and an infant under 8 months has already missed multiple well-child checks, or it's clear that the family has strained resources or health disparities caused by social determinants of health, like poverty, lack of transportation, or lack of education, you might decide to give it early while the baby's there in front of you to ensure that the baby is protected at the start of RSV season. Because of this year's national shortage on nirsevimab, most eligible children that I talked about before won't get the vaccine. Providers should prioritize the highest risk infants first and continue to use palivizumab for eligible patients because we know that they already have access to protection through their high-risk eligibility. And that means that we can use the current nirsevimab supply on the highest risk children from American Indian, Alaska Native populations, or children experiencing health inequities. Another option to protect infants during the shortage is to encourage pregnant women to receive the RSV bivalent prefusion maternal vaccine. That's Abrysvo by Pfizer. Because maternal vaccination is also effective at reducing infant hospitalization. Nirsevimab comes in prefilled syringes, 50 milligrams for smaller babies, 100 milligrams for babies over 5 kilos. And it might be tempting to give a larger baby two 50 milligram doses since the 100 milligrams are in short supply. But that is not recommended for a couple of reasons. First, remember that it's infants less than 3 months who are most likely to have severe disease, So let's vaccinate as many small babies as we can with those 50 milligram doses. And second, there's a good chance that an insurance company won't pay for two 50 milligram syringes used on an individual infant. Now it's time to talk about the dreaded vaccine hesitant parents. And this is a conversation that you don't actually need to dread. It's like a muscle. The more you flex it, the stronger it gets, and the more confident you become at having crucial vaccine conversations. Remember that overarchingly, families want a genuine, authentic relationship with their healthcare providers. So use motivational interviewing to meet them where they are and figure out where their hesitancy lies. I'm from North Carolina, so kill 'em with kindness is a common phrase used down south. But I actually prefer to kill 'em with science. Clearly, we don't want to hurt any caregivers. It's just a saying. But it's the idea that we can overwhelm them with science to convert their beliefs and reassure them. It's your job to know the science behind your recommendations and share trusted information with families. Maybe their hesitancy lies in the safety. Tell them, well, we know from clinical trials that this is a very safe vaccine with minimal side effects. As with any injection, they may experience some pain, redness, or swelling at the injection site. Clinical trials demonstrated great safety with rare events of severe allergy, injury, or death. Maybe they don't think the infant really needs it. You can share, nirsevimab has great efficacy too. It's not going to prevent RSV infection entirely, but it offers about 80% protection against lower respiratory infections requiring hospitalization. I liken it to a seatbelt in the car. It's not going to keep you from getting in an accident, but it's going to save your life when you do get in an accident. Maybe parents think there are too many shots at these visits and they don't want to see their baby cry or overwhelm their immune system. And I get it. Those have been some fleeting fears that I've shared before too. But the CDC actually recommends giving it with regularly scheduled vaccines, which should not increase the risk of adverse events. And since it's passive immunization with a monoclonal antibody, it provides direct protection without testing their immune system at all. I can think of so many more traumatic things than my baby crying for a few minutes and having sore thighs for a couple of days. An ambulance ride to the emergency department. Seeing my baby on high-flow nasal cannula. Seeing my baby on monitors and oxygen. My baby requiring an IV, additional injectable medications, and, heaven forbid, intubation with mechanical ventilation. It happens every year to 57,000 children in the United States, where one in five of them will require the ICU. And at long last, when all else has failed to convert them to believers of the safety and efficacy of the RSV monoclonal antibody vaccine against severe disease, tell them what you would do if you were in their shoes. You don't have to be a parent to relate to them. Put their child at the center of the conversation and throw in some personal experience if you'd like. For me, well, I know that my daughter had RSV, and then she ended up with recurrent otitis media, which impacted her hearing. I wish it had been an option for her. I would have given it without hesitation to save her from multiple rounds of antibiotics and the impact on her development. That's the kind of personal connection families need to have to know that they're making the right decision, to know their hesitations are okay to have, and that the benefits outweigh the risks. I hope that you'll like, comment, and subscribe to the Peds NP, where we discuss the practical application of evidence-based practice in a conversational way that helps you synthesize and transform the best practices from the literature into your clinical bedside skills. Share it with a colleague, pass it along to your classmates, and text it to a friend. There's no financial support or conflict of interest in this episode of the Peds NP. You can see show notes and references at thepedsnp.com. Follow me on Instagram at thepedsnppodcast. And remember, this isn't just a podcast. Sharing science with families can make a big difference in patient outcomes. I'm Becky Carson. Take care.